Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota. Thriving communities, big and small, do not happen by chance. Healthy communities happen because people organized, they considered what was valuable and important to the success of their town, created a vision, and put plans into action. The Headwaters Regional Development Commission is an organization that helps communities and regular people make decisions for a brighter future, and Joel Anastasio is the Environmental and Development Specialist for Headwaters Regional Development Commission, and he's the Northwest Regional Clean Energy Resource Team Coordinator, and he's here to tell us about the work of the HRDC and the impact it has on the region. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're happy you're here. What exactly is the Headwaters Regional Development Commission?
Sure. So we're a local form of government, and I always say the big part of our job is we do planning and development for organizations, and we're appointed by the Minnesota legislature. So we help serve communities, other local governments. We work to help them move and charge forward with any plans or projects they have, so we sort of create this capacity for them.
Okay. So what kind of services do you provide?
I'll give just a brief sort of list of what we do.
Well, there's
we do
so much.
Yeah, there really is. So we do economic and community development. We have housing services. And under that housing services, some of the examples are our rehabilitation loan. With the loan, we also have this program that we do home buyers education. And we have natural resource and environmental planning, which is sort of my arena. And then we do transportation and active living. So an active living, for example, would be like Safe Routes to Schools or the Statewide Health Improvement Partnerships. So the SHIP program,
okay,
where we work with schools and their school strategy. So those are just some of the I would say, like umbrella programs. And then we have these other projects that fall underneath them.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's really cool.
The wide array. So what is your job as the Environmental and Development Specialist?
Yeah.
What is that and what do you do?
So, you know, when we talk about our titles, it's so hard to pinpoint everything we do because there's so much. So for me, I always say when you see that title, I'm an environmental economist. My background, my undergrad degree is in economics with a focus in environmental. And then my master's is in energy regulation law and climate law. So even though I have that sort of niche, I do this environmental work like assessments. I do renewable development, energy efficiency education, natural resource management. And then under that, there's also these smaller projects like the SHIP program, mm-hmm, where I work with the schools. So, for instance, we have LaPorte that has a bike fleet and they have a farm to school. So the school does, they have these farms that the kids get to do, and then it goes to the cafeteria and they get to eat the food they grow. So I'll work on that project. And so there's a couple of smaller things, but that environmental sort of umbrella, you know, fits under that.
So how do environmental issues affect the economies of towns?
So we're in a unique situation because when you think of, like, let's say, you know, climate change, it's a huge one. It could be controversial. You know, you see it all the time. But where we have other issues. So you may not see sea level rise with us, or you may not see these hurricanes blowing through. But we have other issues. So we talk about public health is also a part of it. We talk about our energy burden. So we have a huge energy burden here because of the amount that we need to heat our homes, to heat our businesses, because the winters are so intense. You know, being from the East Coast, I had no idea they were this intense. So we do require a lot of energy from the grid. So that's also a part of that. You know, we think of the impacts of that. How much energy are we using? And so I think even though we may not see some of these larger issues that you may see in the news, we're still affected by it. But we also have a sweet spot, too.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking when I first met you,
mm-hmm,
a couple months ago.
Yep.
And you were mentioning something, the term resilient communities.
Yep.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So resilient communities are... So if we go by definition, it's the capacity and ability of the community to respond or withstand any sort of environmental hazard. The resources that we have, how do we protect ourselves, or when we're needing to, maybe if there's a huge storm that comes through and let's say we get a ton of trees that are knocked down or we have power that's knocked out, how fast are we responding to that? So the resources are our big issue. But then you have another portion. So another example could be economic, you know, impacts. You know, you have you know, we rely a lot on tourism here during the summer. We have people that come from all over to, you know, we have such great natural resources here and our waters and our lakes. So what happens if tourism were to decline or we were to decrease? That's an economic impact too. So how do we respond to that? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think sometimes when we talk about resiliency, we think maybe just environmental, but it's also, you know, other factors, you know, public health too. How do we respond to, for having long flu seasons? How do we do that? So that feeds into some of the other work we're doing. We're doing a vulnerability assessment. HRDC is working. We have partners in BSU, specifically Dr. Anna Carlson, and I have been working together. When I first moved here, we talked about this vulnerability assessment and BSU being a huge player in resiliency planning. So you can't do that planning until you have an assessment, because you want to see where the vulnerability is. Where are the gaps that our resources can't withstand any sort of environmental or economic impact? And I think that's really important for us because, again, we're in this unique situation. We may not be feeling climate change readily, or right now we're having a ton of it. Or, you know, we talk about these small island developing states and, you know, the Caribbean. They're feeling it. I mean, they're really getting affected. So maybe we don't have that, but if we have time to get ahead of it and figure out where the vulnerability is, then you can do resiliency planning. So it's a sort of a process.
And so many different aspects of resiliency.
Yeah, there is. It is. There's a lot of different variables. And I think that's part of why it's this project is so important to do a vulnerability assessment. Our idea is to do it for Beltrami County and then have the other counties or surrounding cities say, wow, this is a great example. Maybe we can do this. And because our tribal communities, they're doing this work and they should be our partners. You know, it'd be so great to look at the example they're setting. So, and they're in our region, we're part together. So let's get some examples from them as well. And so it's been great because we've been talking with specifically Red Lake as well. And they've been so awesome in the work that they're doing. So I think the partnerships are important too in this, because if it's just a few of you, then it's so hard to get that traction for it. So
yeah. So which counties do you serve?
So we serve, we've got five counties that are sort of under our umbrella. And so it's Beltrami, Clearwater, Hubbard, Lake of the Woods, and Manoman.
Okay.
And then for the clean energy resource teams, it kind of broadens, but for HRDC, that's our five main.
Okay. Yeah. And there are development commissions around the state.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So we call them RDCs, and then we're the Headwaters RDC. Yeah.
Okay. I'm talking with Joel Anastasio. He's the Environmental and Development Specialist for the Headwaters Regional Development Commission. We were just talking about resilient communities. What are some of the projects that are happening right in our region that are making our communities more resilient?
So we've got a few different projects, and when we talk about you know, gosh, what are different areas doing? One of the things I like to tell people is look at like our, for instance, BICAP, they do weatherization. That's a great program, especially for underserved communities that are like, gosh, I have a lot of, you know, energy efficiency things that I'd love to do. There's that program. Also, we see solar and energy efficiency programming going on. So for instance, HRDC, we do these energy efficiency workshops.
Okay.
And we've done a few in the past, and then we're getting ready to do another round of them for this fall. And I always encourage people to come to that or call me at HRDC. We'll let you know when they are. We do a lot. We do outreach for them as well. But that really helps, because that's like what's your entry level that you can do to start doing energy efficiency? Because you always want to start there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that going on. And we have our tribal communities taking advantage of the solar and the vulnerability assessment again. So when you think of solar, you're like, oh, you know, solar right away, that's kind of a big thing. So always energy efficiency first. So I'd say between renewables and education, that's what we're seeing in the area. And then, of course, we've got BSU that's doing a lot of great work and getting the youth involved. So getting ahead of it there. So there's a lot of different players, and I feel like everyone's just working together. So
are some of the easiest ways to increase our energy efficiency?
Mm-hmm.
Like, say you've bought an old house and your heat bill is sky high.
Yep.
What are some of just a couple simple things a person could double check on to make sure.
So I always say the low hanging fruit, the first thing is always LEDs.
Oh.
As a bulb goes out, pop in an LED. They're becoming, they're more affordable now. They're becoming more the norm. So that's really what they have as an option. And if you, and you could do your whole house for pretty cheap too, if you, you know, replacing the bulbs, but even for businesses, LEDs too are low hanging fruit, because you're going to get to a point where they're going to take away the rebates. Cause there are rebates. I would say check with your utility and see if what rebates they have for LEDs or.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they really do. Especially when you, or if you upgrade it, like an appliance, they have that Energy Star. We see it, but sometimes we get it, we install it, and we forget about it. It's like, even though that's that may be $50 that you can, you know, throw in and get a little rebate back.
For real?
If it
has an Energy Star thing on there,
you can
get a rebate?
Yeah, there's a form and you fill it out and you set it into the where it tells you and you just follow the directions. And
okay.
So those are like little things, like sealing windows and doors, getting the seals, checking it before winter hits, doing maintenance on your heating and cooling. I always say before summer, to make sure your cooling is working and then also your heating right before winter. It's always good to get a maintenance check. They're not very expensive. And, you know, also talk to your utility. See if what their process is for an energy assessment for your home. Sometimes they're little to no cost, depending on the utility. And they can come in and sort of give you a report and say, this is what maybe you can improve on. This may help save you some money. You know, and the thought is, oh, gosh, I'd love to save thousands every month, but mm-hmm. It's more over time. You'll see it, you know, this average every month. And, you know, for us, I love it cold. Mm-hmm. So in the summer, I want my house really cold. So then when the winter comes, I keep my house pretty cold then. So that sort of offsets how much I'm spending, sort of averages out throughout the year.
Okay. So you are the Clean Energy Resource Team Coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
What does that team do? And what kind of projects have you guys helped get implemented?
Yeah, so we do a few different things. Sort of on the surface explanation, we do we connect with customers and connect them to the resources they need. So if they want to install solar, if they energy efficiency, we connect them to who they need to talk to about that.
And this is just regular people or businesses?
Exactly, yeah. We are we're all throughout the state. We have different regions. So I'm the Northwest region, which is a pretty big, wide region. So we really try to get further, you know, up north as we can, because as you get rural, it's like they don't get to hear a lot of what's going on, or they maybe don't have the access. So that's our way to connect, and that's part of our job. We also work to do webinars and learning events. So we had an EV event for electric vehicle infrastructure in Moorhead recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do that type of learning. And then we do seed grants, which there'll be a seed grant round opening up in August. And so I tell people, contact me. They're small seed grants between $5,000 and $5,000, but they help with clean energy projects.
Okay.
And so each region will have a certain amount, and then we look at applications.
And a regular person could apply for that kind of a grant, or is that for nonprofits?
More for, nonprofits, special attention to underserved communities that an organization who serves, because we really want to get as much as we can, because that's where a lot of the energy burden is.
Yeah.
So you want to target that.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned that you do is a work with communities to become Green Step community.
Yes.
What is that? And what size community can be a Green Step community, and what happens?
So Green Step Cities is a designation. It's a voluntary program. Any city can join it. And part of Green Step Cities is to help move environmental stewardship on. And so all you have to do is do the council passes this resolution. There's a template on the website, and you're a step one.
Okay, the city council.
Yep. Exactly. Very easy. There's three groups. It's either you're an A city, B city, or C city. And then that's what tells you what best practices you need to do to get to the next step. Because there's 29 best practices. They fall under five categories, like building and lighting, land use, things of that nature. There's five categories.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So it helps. It's an outline for how to become more sustainable.
Exactly. Yeah. It gives you a good, and it keeps them accountable, keeps cities accountable. And some don't even realize your step one is just passing the resolution and joining it. And then you can look and say, wow, we've done this work in the past, and you can apply, put that towards it. And you may be a step two pretty fast, and you don't have to go to there's five steps. You don't have to go to every step every year. You can take some time if other priorities come up, but it's just a good program that doesn't cost you anything, you know, to join. So
yeah. And the payoff is great in the end.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And cities get really proud of that, and mm-hmm. people hear about it, and it's amazing. You may not think it off the bat, but when they hear Green Step, they're like, oh, I want to know what you did. So it's a good example too.
Tell me about a small town that's a Green Step city,
mm-hmm.
and like something that a small town has done.
Yes. So Warren, let's say Warren's a really small town, mm-hmm. and they have done a ton of work. So they have, one of their things is they've gotten this curbside recycling program. They do this, they're starting a program where they're looking, using drones for infrared to look at where heat is, you know, escaping the homes. Yeah, they're doing a ton. They have the program where they partner with, I think it's Augsburg in Germany. And so it's this program through, I think, the Minnesota Extension, University of Minnesota Extension. And Germany comes here, their city comes here to see what we do. Warren goes there and they take and they adopt things. And yeah, so they're just, and they're a Green Step city and they're doing great work.
And you guys are there as a support
group
to help with suggestions and help them problem solve and things like that.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. We will help drive the Green Step City program for them if they need capacity. So there's a benchmarking program that we help where they track their energy usage. So that could be one example how we'd help.
And you guys are going to be at the fair talking more about this kind of thing?
Yes. So HRDC got a grant through the Department of Commerce. We'll be there August 31st and we'll be there 9 to 9. And what we'll do is we'll highlight projects in Bemidji. So each city applied. So it'll just be Bemidji. But I think Warren might have gotten, they'll have a day too at the fair.
Okay.
So there was 12 cities that were chosen, one for each day. And so we're going to highlight solar projects like Harmonies, Security Banks, Lakeland PBS Solar. We're going to Beltrami Electric Solar. We're going to talk about the EV projects, the upgrades Bemidji did with the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program where they upgraded the 9 buildings. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about BSU's Tiny Home. And we're going to have a mini model of it that we're bringing with us to talk about how that reduces your carbon footprint. And so, yeah, so it's really cool. So if you're at the fair, come on August 31st, come see Bemidji. Well, there's a few of us who are going to be there volunteering for the whole day. And so,
awesome.
Yeah.
That is Joel Anastasio. He is the Environmental and Development Specialist for Headwaters Regional Development Commission. If you have questions about the work he's doing or would like to connect with HRDC about other services from community improvement and development to home buying education and much more, connect with HRDC. They're an organization that is serving the community in really great ways. So thanks for all you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Airy Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the people of Minnesota.